All right, everyone, this is Jeevers, and you are on the Wednesday Night Healthy Body Challenge call. I hope you guys are doing well. Thanks so much for joining me after a hopefully a wonderful 4th of July. And you guys had a great time celebrating with fireworks and friends and picnics and all that sort of stuff. I'm actually out here in San Diego. I'm actually going to be out here for the entire month of July enjoying some of this beach weather while Arizona is flaming hot this month. And so it should be cool. I'm here with some friends, or not some friends, some family, and I will be at the corporate offices here in Chula Vista every few days or so. So it's really exciting for me, and hopefully it is exciting for them so we can get a bunch of work done before our amazing convention that is going to be in August. I hope all of you that are listening are going to be there. It's going to be a great, great time. We're releasing some new products. We've got some new celebrities and personalities. We've got over 100 breakout sessions that we're doing. We've got a ton of education. We've got all of the speakers you are probably really, really familiar with. Because, you know, it's really special. It's Youngevity's 20-year anniversary, and so Steve Wallach and Michelle Wallach and Dr. Joel Wallach are pulling out all of the stops. So it should be super, super fun, and I hope that you guys will be there so I can see you and meet you and do all that sort of fun stuff. So, but anyways, guys, one of the things that I wanted to kind of talk about on tonight's call was something that actually just crazy came up just the other day. Yesterday, I was with some friends here, and one of my friends that we actually go see the same naturopath in Scottsdale, she was saying, hey, she had just gone seen our naturopath, and she was running some blood tests on her. And I said, oh, why is Doc running some blood tests on you? And she said, well, because here's the thing. It's crazy. The last few months, I have been feeling so, so tired. My joints are achy, but not only my joints are achy, my muscles are achy too, like in between the joints. She was pointing like right at her thigh. She was pointing to her bicep and tricep. She was pointing to like all of the in-between areas between the joints. And then she also said that she just kept gaining weight. She didn't know what she was doing, but she was just gaining and gaining weight. And this friend of mine, you know, has done a lot of different kind of diets, okay, right? One of the ones that I'm really familiar with, because she did lose a lot of weight on there and she looked really great, was that whole the HCG diet, you know, right? Do you guys remember a couple of years ago it was super popular? It was like, you know, there was all these HCG clinics popping up everywhere, and basically they were putting you on a diet or a nutritional plan that a doctor had put together, Dr. Simeon's, a while ago. I can't exactly remember when, but it was basically a calorie restrictive diet. It was around 800, 900 calories. Sometimes it was even as low as 500 calories. And then you would take this hormone called HCG. And I won't dig too much into this, but the whole point was is that she had done that, lost some weight. She had done kind of the Atkins diet, lost some weight. But she would always keep kind of gaining it back. And so this time, though, she just kept gaining and gaining no matter what she was doing, right? So she went to go see our doc and running some blood tests, and she got her results back. And sure enough, you know, our doc said, you know what you have is you have Hashimoto's thyroiditis, okay, right? And this is one of the ones which, for those of you that are Dr. Wallach followers, you've probably heard a lot of, okay, right? Because Hashimoto's is a thyroid kind of inflammation. That's why it's called thyroiditis, okay, right? And thyroiditis basically is, the itis is inflammation, okay, right? Anytime you hear that, bursitis, arthritis, you know, anytime you hear the itis, you just hear inflammation. And Hashimoto's is basically an inflammation of the thyroid gland. And guys, I hear Hashimoto's like all the time. Like, it seems like doctors are just, listen, I just feel like just because the thyroid gland does so many different things, it causes people to have joint pain. It can be linked to joint pain. It can be linked to muscle pain, nerve pain. It can be linked to fatigue. It can be linked to weight gain. It can be linked to all of these different things. I just feel like doctors use that as a very easy solution. They just point to the thyroid and they point to one of the key kind of diseases of the thyroid, which is Hashimoto's. Okay, right? So I'm kind of hearing this and I'm like, oh God, whatever. Like seriously, like that's what she pulled out from you, you know, right? And I said, well, tell me what's going on a little bit more. Okay, right? Well, I knew that she did have a history of low thyroid function because she had been going to the same doc as I have, and we do tests every a quarter at least, you know, right? And so I knew that her life is pretty stressful. I mean, she takes care of two boys. Her husband is an awesome, awesome guy, but honestly, he's like another boy, and so she's constantly taking care of all three of them, you know, right? And she's had a few past medical problems, you know, right? And I knew that she was sensitive to like certain foods, okay, right? She had a few allergies to certain foods. Now, do remember, guys, I am not like a big believer so much in the fact that people have allergies. I'm more into the fact that their immune systems are just not strong enough to deal with whatever food or pathogen or the bacteria, the pollen, whatever it is. And many, many allergies, not all of them, but many allergies can be relieved, or their symptoms can be relieved to the point where you don't even notice them by just supporting a healthy immune system, right? Because at the very end of the day, you know, we're all breathing in the same air. We're all eating the same types of foods. It's just very odd that most of the population is not, you know, allergic, if you will, to that certain pollen or that certain food or whatever. And it probably has a lot to do genetically, and it has a lot to do with your immune system's response from a genetic standpoint, by the way, you know, right? And so anyways, I'm hearing kind of all of this, and she tells me she has Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and obviously I know Hashimoto's thyroiditis is basically your immune system being overreactive and attacking the thyroid gland, okay, right? Now, here's the thing. I guarantee you that when I told her this, by the way, is that if she did a gluten sensitivity test, that she would be highly sensitive to gluten, okay, right? And once she recognizes that she's highly sensitive to gluten, and here's the thing too, by the way, guys, is that I know that there's like a huge gluten debate, okay, right? People say, you know, a lot of professionals, by the way, medical professionals will say, you really shouldn't have to worry about gluten unless you're really testing as gluten intolerant. Not even gluten that's sensitive, but gluten intolerant. And so intolerant basically means you're categorized in a disease like celiac disease, right? Where celiac patients affected or individuals affected who have celiac disease don't have the ability to have this microvilli or these villi that's in the gastrointestinal tract that help to break down certain proteins. And gluten is a protein, by the way. And so it can't break down that protein, and so that it becomes very gel-like, and it starts clogging up the digestive system. And that gel then also creates an irritation in the intestinal tract, which then causes inflammation, which then causes all of these different types of health issues or whatever, okay, right? But here's the thing, guys, is that what we are saying, what Dr. Wallach is saying and others are saying is we're not saying that everyone is gluten intolerant. We're not even saying that a lot of people are highly gluten sensitive. But what we are saying is that gluten is inflammatory. That's a fact. That's a fact. Just like sugar is inflammatory, that's a fact. And so regardless of whether you're sensitive, regardless of whether you're intolerant, it's still going to be inflammatory. Now, the thing with gluten is that not only is it inflammatory, but it actually causes a greater deterioration of the digestive system, which over long periods of time can cause an entire gastrointestinal dysfunction. When you have gastrointestinal dysfunction, you essentially then create the environment in which the body doesn't have the ability to break down nutrition, which then it can't utilize nutrients, and it can't absorb nutrients, and it can't get the health from nutrients. So that's the thing. I think people are totally missing the point about when Dr. Wallach talks about no gluten. What he's saying, listen, is that if you continue to eat gluten, regardless of how intolerant or sensitive that you are, over a long period of time, you are going to get to a point in which your digestive system is not going to be at optimal function, which then causes you not to get the nutrition from the foods that you eat, which then causes a direct link to your lack of health. And not only will it be your lack of health, but it will be your inability to gain health back, because the only way for you to truly gain your health back is by this fueling your body of great nutrition. So anyways, guys, that was kind of a tangent. Anyway, so they'll probably find that out. And one of the last things that I asked her was, I said, hey, how do you sleep? How's your sleep? How are you doing at night? And really what I was trying to say was, because I know how busy her life is and how stressful her life is that is she able to truly unwind and put her body into a state of restfulness so that she could get some sleep? And I was going to go off on this huge kind of diatribe of like creating the right environment, you know, by, I don't know, if I was going to talk to her about shutting down, you know, the TV or shutting down the iPad or shutting down whatever, even reading, you know, 45 minutes before going to bed and making sure that the temperature in the room is, you know, 67 to 70 degrees, and even using essential oils. Like, I was going to launch into this whole kind of thing. But here's the thing, guys, but here's what I realized is that her lack of proper sleep was really due to the fact that she was not in a very hormonal, healthy sense. And that's a big issue, is that, you know, when you're not hormonally healthy, your body does not have the ability to get into the rhythm in which it needs for optimal wellness. And see, the last, I don't know, probably the last 10 years or so, not even that, maybe 8 to 10 years or so, this whole science of sleep has become very, very big, has been talked about more and more. And I'll tell you what, it's going to be talked about a lot more here in the next 3 to 5 years. And because there's some big companies and big individuals who are starting to do more research in kind of the science of sleep. And we can even understand from even scientific literature today that shows us that sleep dictates everything. It dictates how we eat, how much we eat, how fast our metabolism runs, how fat or thin we're going to get, whether we have the ability to fight off infections, even how creative and insightful that we can be. There are studies that show that sleep directly links itself to how creative people are. And a lot of that has to do with the fact of how sleep helps to build neurological health. And that's why a lot of the times it is associated with how we're able to deal with stress, how we can actually process inflammation, learn new things, how we store memories. No, it's funny. I remember, like, as a kid, my dad would always, like, wake me up. And I'm sure many of you parents would kind of do that thing too with the kids, is, oh, you know, on the weekends they're sleeping too long, you know, and they sleep a lot, if they will, you know. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't, you know, wake them up, but what I am saying is that you got to be really careful, especially when children are younger, to make sure that they get enough sleep, and more sleep the better. Hey, listen, you know, I've been telling my sister and brother-in-law with the kids is that, you know, I'm not advocating the fact that Dylan and Annika, my niece and nephew, you know, sometimes they stay up really late to watch TV and they play video games or they're hanging out with their friends, and so therefore they're waking up at like 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock in the afternoon, or like 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock. That's not right, but that's not right for a variety of reasons. The biggest reason, though, that it's not the least reason that I'm worried about is the fact that they need to be waking up at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock just because that's a healthy thing to do. It's not. It's the number of hours that they need to eat, and the fact that they were sleeping, the fact that they were up too late is whole nother topic, right? But they really, really sleep is one of the biggest things. If I remember my, you know, I'll say one more last story, but my dad would always, he'd get, my dad's an early riser, and he kind of taught all of us kids in the household to be early risers. And my mom, you know, she was not an early riser, and she definitely wasn't an early riser when she had her health issues, you know, when she had her diabetes and things like that. My dad would always kind of say, oh, you know, your mom, she sleeps too late, you know, in the morning, and she sleeps in the afternoon and stuff. And I would always say, Dad, listen, sleep is a healthy thing for her. Sleep is actually medicine for her. Is because, you know, sleep, when she gets, there's no food, there's no medicine, there's no anything that is going to be able to give her the health like sleep can. And because she is in this diseased state, in this ill state, her body is actually forcing her to go to sleep because it wants to heal. And you're ruining that. You're ruining that rhythm. You're ruining that medicine, if you will. You're diluting that medicine, you know, right? And it's hard for anyone to understand if you don't really get it. But that's something that you've got to be really, really careful, because sleep, like I said, it's a different, I mean, it's just linked to so many different things, okay, right? And you'll notice that people that there was a really great study that was done in 2013, and I remember because I was in London, and there was a study that was done by the University of London. There was the London University, sorry, and it was linked to actually genetics. It showed that so what was it? Depriving an individual worth a week of sleep, okay, found that a week of sleep deprivation basically altered the function of almost 700 different genes. Now, the reason why this was so important is because those genes were actually related to how the body responds to four major things: stress, inflammation, immunity, and metabolism. And that's why I was so interested in the study back then, is because if you take a look at those four things that I just told you, they're basically the very core of your health performance. And the health performance, what I mean by that, how I'm defining that, is how you're able to fight off different types of pathogens or viruses or bacteria, how you're able to recover, how you're able to deal with environmental and physiological kind of stimulants or traumas, and then also how your body uses its primary weapon, inflammation, to deal with all of the different traumas and stresses. That's why I was so incredibly interested in the fact that this study had linked an alteration of the 700 genes, over 700 genes, that linked to these four kind of core areas of where your help is, right? And then obviously it's shown that those things also negatively impacted your brain health, you know, right? And also what they had found was that these genes had actually, some of these genes were actually responsible to producing the proteins that allowed for replacing and repairing of damaged tissue. And when people had a week's worth of poor, just a week's worth of poor sleep, that some of those genes that were responsible for these proteins, they stop working entirely. So this is a really, really big problem. And even the statistics are there. Like, I don't know about you guys that are on the call, but how it kind of doles out right now is that they say that 10% of Americans suffer from chronic insomnia, and 25% of us report that we don't get enough sleep at least 2 days during the week. Okay, right? And I think, guys, that number is really, really low, because what most people focus on is the quantity of sleep rather than looking at the quality of sleep. And the quality of sleep is something that is even more important than the 8 hours or the 9 hours or wherever it is, okay, right? And the thing about that is that, you know, people, a lot of pharmaceuticals right now, they help an individual to get into sleep, but they don't necessarily keep people at sleep. And what I mean by that is there's two different types of sleep cycles. There's a sleep cycle that puts you into sleep, and then there's the second sleep cycle that allows you to stay in sleep. And a lot of people, they tend waking up in the middle of the night. And guys, it's not unusual or it's not bad to wake up in the middle of the night. And actually, you should be lightly aroused 2 to 3 times during an 8-hour period, because I don't know how many of you know this, but you actually go through 3 cycles of 5 stages of sleep. There's actually 5 stages of sleep, and you actually take those cycles that would be 1 through 5 3 times in an 8 to 9 hour period. In those stages, there is basically 2 stages that you are, you're going to be easily awakened, if you will, okay, right? This is kind of like if you were napping and you were just dozing off and you heard a sound, immediately you'd wake up, or if you sensed something, you would wake up, or if you just kind of, you're like maybe on the plane, you know, you're neck drops and you immediately wake up. Those are when you're in stages 1 and 2, okay, right? And then there's the stage 3, which is you're actually a little bit more of a deeper sleep, but you would wake up if you heard a loud noise or if the temperature changed quickly or if something moved around that you were sleeping in. And see, these 1 to 3 stages, you actually cycle in 3 times during an 8 or 9 hour period. And so a lot of people will lightly wake up. They don't even notice it most of the time, and they go back to sleep. But the problem is a lot of people will actually wake up, and then they'll stay awake, and that's a problem, okay, right? And so anyways, this whole thing is that these numbers, I think, are very low compared to how many people have a problem with sleeping. And what I was trying to say earlier is that, you know, sleep really relates to hormonal balance, and hormonal balance really influences a lot of different things. And one of those things that I always kind of talk about is the effects on hunger. Okay, right? And it's actually a little bit unusual, guys. in men and women, it's actually different how poor sleep affects hunger, but it may be different how it affects hunger, but it ends up at the same place. So let me give you an example. So in men, when they don't get sufficient sleep or sleep quality, it elevates a hormone called ghrelin. And this hormone actually will stimulate appetite. So it causes men to want to eat more. Okay? Now, the weird thing is that when they tested women, this hormone, ghrelin, they weren't influenced by the lack of sleep. But another hormone called GLP-1 was influenced. And GLP-1 is an appetite-suppressing hormone. And what happens with GLP-1 is it gets suppressed. So this hormone that's supposed to suppress your appetite gets suppressed. So it causes women to what? Overeat. So it does the same. So the result is the same for male and female, but the hormonal pathway is different. And the reason why I just kind of bring that up, guys, is because, you know, I know a lot of people will talk and you'll read a lot about certain hormones and what you can do for certain hormones. And it's not always that same pathway that's causing male, female, older male, older female, younger male, older female, the same. That's why hormones are so insanely complex, because they're so multifactorial, you know, right? And so anyways, guys, you get a little bit more of an appreciation for the fact that you've got to look at everything almost as a very comprehensive, fundamental, foundational approach. And that's why Dr. Wallach's kind of 90 for life and 90 essential nutrients is such a valuable kind of lesson and an important a way to treat your health issues, because you don't know, you know, that a certain nutrient or a certain combination of nutrients is what's going to cause you to have the health that you want, because it could be working on one pathway, but your issue may be a different pathway, but you're still getting the same result. Do you see what I'm saying? You have to be careful when someone's like, oh, well, you know what? It's probably just this deficiency, that deficiency, and this deficiency. It's not always that easy, because we all have different kind of pathways, if you will, okay, right? And so when I'm kind of listening to my friend here, okay, right, I am constantly thinking about, and do remember, I'm a bit biased about sleep and things like that. I understand its importance. I've studied a lot of circadian rhythms, and I really do feel that the circadian rhythms are very much at the heart and soul of our well-being, okay, right? And it just seems logical to me, right? I mean, think about it. From our very, very young age, you know, in infancy, you know, we're essentially developing these established kind of patterns that stay with us for the rest of our life, you know. These patterns, they're very cyclical, and they're cyclical on this kind of 24-hour time, if you will, okay, right? And people link it all the way to like the 24-hour solar day and the cosmic kind of things. And there is, hey, listen, I don't really understand a lot of that sort of stuff, but I do understand that a lot of that always keeps kind of coming up, even in the traditional sciences, okay, right? In the traditional sciences. And then I also have this kind of research that I've done on chronobiological rhythms. And chronobiological rhythms basically just does the same thing and says, hey, your body does different things at different times of the day. And so your body temperature ebbs and flows, you know, right? It's on the time that you're going to feel asleep and when you're awake and when you're able to fight off certain illnesses and stuff is all kind of this like perfect little dance that your hormones play with each other, right? And so that's why you'll notice I read this really great study that like shift workers, you know, shift workers, they actually have a lot, they have a high risk of all these potential serious diseases, right? And they're usually diseases that fall in the realm of inflammation diseases, okay, right? Itis types of diseases, okay, right? Which I mean a lot of them are kind of already linked to anyway. But I mean, if you really look at people who kind of mess up these rhythms, those individuals really do mess up the rhythms and cause their bodies to have high amounts of inflammatory responses, right? And so anyways, guys, I hope that what this kind of provided was this. I talk about sleep all the time. I know you guys know that I value it. I hope that you guys get into a pattern of healthy sleep, and a pattern of a healthy sleep is making sure that you sleep for not only certain times, a certain block of time, 8 hour time or whatever, but it's also on a rhythm, like it's a 10 o'clock to whatever o'clock or a 9 o'clock or 9:30 or whatever it is. I mean, that's a very, very key thing for you to get into this rhythm of the body. And then secondly, know that it's tied very much in your hormonal health. And so everyone from women who are going through postmenopause all the way to, you know, young men who are having high issues with stress and adrenal gland dysfunction and things like that, it really helps for all of those conditions. But one of the key things that you need to do is you need to make sure that you keep fueling your body all of this really great nutrition. And you do that, obviously, using I love what Dr. Wallach said the other day is he says, I use my food as my supplement. Nowadays, the way that food is being grown and processed and agriculturalized and all that sort of stuff, I can't even depend on my food. So I depend on the longevity products to feed me my primary set of nutrients, and I leave foods as kind of the frosting on the cake and the secondary. And as much as I would hate to want to think that way, that's just how it's become. So anyways, guys, hope that was valuable to you. I will hear all of you next week Wednesday, and make sure that you sign up for convention. I'm so sorry. I think if you haven't signed up for a convention, you are going to have to try to find it through another ticket on Facebook or something, because we are sold out. I do remember Michelle telling me that the other day. But don't go anywhere, because we have the wonderful Leanne King, who will be talking about essential oils, which I am in love with. And I know that there is an incredible amount of value of information that Leanne has in her app and her book. So make sure you get that. So, Leanne, are you out there?
Hi,